Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Dune Part 1, Bergman Island, and The Velvet Underground. So what have you gotten up to this week, David?
Well, I'll tell you, Jill, there's a lot of stuff hopping here, as you can tell from these three titles, I hope. And I'd like to start off by saying some things about Dune Part 1. Now, this is commonly being referred to as Dune, and this is just such an interesting sort of an origin story here. First of all, Dune, big, huge science fiction movie that everybody is talking about at the moment, is based on the novel of the same title, which I have read actually more than once, novel by Frank Herbert. And it is a science fiction project. The novel is a science fiction novel, very, very popular and very influential one in all sorts of ways. And it was made into a movie by none other than the great American, I call him a surrealist filmmaker, David Lynch, back in the middle 80s. And David Lynch's version of the novel Dune, which seemed at the time like a sort of a fairly ideal David Lynch project, since the big sort of setting for this whole story, this movie, this tale, is on a planet totally covered with sand. And David Lynch loves bizarre settings and bizarre costumes and bizarre situations, and so it seemed ideal for him. But the movie back in the middle 80s by David Lynch did not turn out all that well. I actually looked at it again recently, and you know, it's not bad. It has its moments. It has some moments that are really, really bad, but it has some other moments which are really, really good, and which are the kind of thing that David Lynch does very well. In any case, however, the movie did not turn out very well. David Lynch himself does not much like his own adaptation of Dune. It's probably his least favorite among his own movies. The only good thing about it was that when he made that movie, it was sort of a part of a production deal that also allowed him to make his movie Blue Velvet, which is one of his most interesting and personal movies. But anyway, that's all about the movie from the middle 80s. All these years, there's been wonder, will somebody else turn his or her hand to Dune and try another movie version of it? And now it has happened. And the director who has done this is Denis Villeneuve, who is a Canadian director. And he's a very interesting director, I think, in a lot of ways. One of his early movies, Ascendee, I think is actually probably his best. It's the one I like the best. In recent years, he sort of turned into something of a science fiction specialist. He made the movie Arrival. He made Blade Runner 2049, which was the 3D sequel to the Ridley Scott Blade Runner. And now he has made Dune, which is officially known, if you actually look at the movie, it's officially known as Dune Part 1. Now, one of the interesting things about this title is that when the movie opened, which was very recently, a few days ago from when we're talking, when the movie opened, Dune Part 1 was it. And it was unclear whether there would ever be a Dune Part 2. The big question was, would Dune Part 1 do well enough box office-wise so that there would actually end up being a second half? Because the movie only covers the first half of Frank Herbert's novel. So I will now leap to the chase here. It appears that in the week it's been out, Dune Part 1 has in fact done well enough at the box office, and now it has been announced that there will in fact be a Dune Part 2, although I doubt it will be seeing that for at least another year, because this is a very huge kind of a movie, and it'll take a while for Denis Villeneuve to get this movie done. The other interesting thing about Dune Part 1, which henceforth I will simply call Dune, is that Denis Villeneuve is furious with Warner Brothers, the great Hollywood studio, for releasing it as streaming video at the same time it's in theaters. He insists that this movie has got to be seen in movie theaters, not streaming on your home screen. Fascinatingly, back in 1984, I remember interviewing David Lynch, one of my interviews with him way back then, and he insisted that his movie Dune had to be seen in movie theaters with great sound systems and all that. So that seems to be something that is leaping across the ages here. In any case, personally, I don't think it matters much whether you see Dune in a movie theater or whether you see it at least on a large home screen. But Denis Villeneuve would not be happy to hear me saying that. He insists it has to be seen in a theater because it's a huge, big, spectacular movie. Okay, fair enough. So, you know, whether or not one agrees, it's, you know, he has the right to say that. What is Dune about? It is basically a big epic story, very, very Star Wars-like, in my opinion, about a great sort of empire. And there's this planet called Arrakis, which is totally covered with sand. And there are people who come there to run the planet and manage the planet and this and that. And the plot all has to do with this fabulous spice, which is essential for the continued existence of the empire and for the continued existence of space travel and this sort of thing. And there's all this kind of intrigue about who's going to control the spice, who can control the spice, and there's all sorts of bizarre characters involved in this, et cetera, et cetera. I don't personally find the story of this very interesting. I think to the extent that Dune Part 1 is a good movie, and it's a pretty good movie, it really has more to do with the visual spectacle of it and all of that. Now, the acting of it was one thing that I found really, really disappointing. Oscar Isaac is a very good actor. I found him really dull in this movie. Timothée Chalamet looks very nice. He's a very handsome young guy, but I found his acting very dull in this movie. I found almost everybody's acting very dull in this movie. The one person who really stood out to me was Javier Bardem, who plays a character named Stilgar, and it's a very, very tiny little role. So, okay. One of the big problems, I think, with Dune is the acting. It's just really dull. The special effects are spectacular, as I suppose they should be. And the whole thing looks just wonderful and sounds just wonderful and is very exotic and all of that. And it really does have some wonderful moments along the way. But, you know, it's over 2.5 hours long. And I probably found about 20 minutes of that to be really, really kind of compelling. Most of the rest, I just found it very sort of like a retread of the Star Wars conceit, this time with a lot of sand thrown in. So it's a perfectly good movie. If you love science fiction, you'll love this movie. It's finding an enormous number of fans. It's apparently doing very well, being released simultaneously in theaters and streaming. It's apparently, you know, people are going to see it, and that's fine, and it's a very good, ambitious science fiction movie. It didn't do much for me, I have to say. And after a while, I was just hoping it would be over soon. So, okay, that doesn't mean I hated it. It just means that I did not find it exciting or compelling. I suppose that sometime around a year or so from now, there will be a Dune Part 2, and I personally hope that it's a whole lot more interesting and compelling and exciting than Dune Part 1. In the meantime, Dune Part 1 is what it is, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to go see it, and I'm sure a lot of them will have a very nice time, and I salute them all. For me, again, it's a perfectly good movie, but not an exciting movie and not worth all the hype that I'm afraid it's been getting from some people. Turning to our second movie now, let's do something which is really completely different. Bergman Island is a nice, quiet, intimate little art film written and directed by Mia Hansen-Love, who is a talented director for sure. And it's a movie with a kind of a movie theme. We have the main character, very nicely played by Tim Roth and Vicky Creeps. They are a young married couple, and he is a filmmaker, and she is a screenwriter who's sort of stuck on her current project, not getting anywhere. And they go off to the island of Farah, off the coast of Sweden. Now, this is an island, the spelling looks in English like Pharaoh, but it's pronounced Farah. And this is the island where, for much of his career, Ingmar Bergman, the fabulously, legendarily great Swedish filmmaker in real life, where he worked and lived. He made some of his films on Farah, and he lived there for a good part of his life, and especially the later part of his life, when he was a semi-recluse living in this little island in the middle of nowhere with his wife. So that is what Bergman Island refers to. It refers to this island of Farah where this young couple named Tony and Chris go. He is being involved in some way with an Ingmar Bergman film festival, which is being held there, and they're actually getting to stay in Ingmar Bergman's actual house. Bergman, of course, has been dead for many years, but they get to stay in what was his house, and they're very excited about that, and it's very nice. So he's going to do little things with this film festival and explore the island and get to know the island well. She also is going to explore the island and go on a little tour, and in the meantime, they'll both work on their projects while they're off on this little getaway on this island in the middle of nowhere off the coast of Sweden. Now, what happens is that they both meet other people and a little bit of sort of romantic romantic intrigue develops here, and you can see that there are little cracks in what appears on the surface to be a pretty happy marriage between Tony and Chris. And then after a while, again, Chris is working on her screenplay for her next project, and she's sort of stuck with it and not getting anywhere and having trouble with it. And after a while, and this is a surprise that happens long into Bergman Island, we suddenly start seeing the movie that she is developing in her own mind. It becomes a film within the film that we are watching. And that has its own dynamics, its own characters, its own sort of intersection with the actual lives of Tony and Chris as they, you know, wend their way around the island and go on their little tours and get, you know, do their own little things sometimes together and sometimes apart. So what we have in Bergman Island is basically two movies for the price of one. We have the story of this young couple who go to the, well, they're not that young, who go to the island and be involved with their different things. And we have the movie that Vicky is working on as it unfolds in her mind and as it unfolds on the screen that we are watching. So that is what Bergman Island is all about. It's a very nice movie. I did not find it, I'm going to say sort of the same thing I said about Dune Part 1. I did not find it a very compelling movie. I did not find it an exciting movie. It's a nice movie. It's very well acted. It has interesting characters, but it never quite catches fire for me. I wish it were just a little bit, oh, a little bit more powerful in the emotions that it puts on the screen. I saw it, but I didn't really feel it. That said, it's just lovely to know that people like Mia Hansen Love are still out there making intimate, seriously intended art films that deal with emotions much more than with action. This is a very character-driven movie, a very dialogue-driven movie. It has some interesting secondary characters along the way. So even though it didn't excite me, I'm very glad that movies like this still get out there and still get into theaters. So, you know, aside from all the huge action spectacles that we are constantly bombarded by. And I recommend Bergman Island. I recommend it with reservations, but it's a very nice movie, and I think it deserves to be seen by anybody interested in serious film these days. Our third movie, once again, something completely different, The Velvet Underground, which is made by one of the most gifted filmmakers around these days, Todd Haynes. Todd Haynes is mainly a fiction filmmaker. He does not usually make documentaries, and this is very much a documentary. I regard Todd Haynes as a truly, truly amazing director. His movie Safe, back from 1995, is, for my mind, not just the best movie of 1995, but the best movie of the entire 90s. And it's a brilliant film, and every time I see it, I'm completely blown away by it again. His other movies include Far From Heaven, which is also an excellent movie, Carol, which is quite a wonderful movie. He's a really, really good filmmaker. He's a gay filmmaker, and some of his filmmakers deal with gay themes, and then again, some of them don't. He's just a remarkably talented filmmaker, and now he has turned his hand to documentary with The Velvet Underground, which is, you guessed it, about the fabulous rock and roll group back from, you know, some years back now, but a fabulous, fabulous group. And from my mind, I haven't been much interested in rock music or pop music for several decades now. I was a fanatic of rock and roll when I was growing up. I just loved it, and I listened to it all the time, and I was consumed by it in certain ways. And then I kind of lost interest in it a few decades back. And for me, one of the very few groups that really continued to really capture my interest after I lost interest in most of the rest of it was the Velvet Underground. Lou Reed, a fabulous talent in so many ways, a brilliant talent. John Cale, who was the other sort of leading member of the group, an amazing musician who has done all kinds of fascinating work with the Velvet Underground and outside it. The other members of the group, Sterling Morrison, Maureen Tucker, also obviously very talented. So that is what the Velvet Underground is. It is a documentary about the Velvet Underground. And by the way, for a while, they were produced by Andy Warhol, and they were involved in working with Andy Warhol. And that's another fascinating aspect of this documentary, because Andy Warhol, to my mind, is an enduringly fascinating figure, and almost anything about him is bound to be of interest. So here we have Todd Haynes making his first documentary, and it is all about this wonderful rock and roll group. And he's got all kinds of terrific people on the screen, ranging from people like the great filmmaker and entrepreneur Jonas Mekas to the great avant-garde musician Lamont Young to other rockers like Jackson Browne and Jonathan Richman, all kinds of interesting people on the screen. As for The Velvet Underground as a movie, it's interesting that Todd Haynes, as gifted as he is, I think is not usually at his best when he does rock and roll subjects. He made a fiction movie about rock and roll many years ago called Velvet Goldmine that I just felt was too ambitious for its own good. He did a fiction movie about Bob Dylan called I'm Not There, which I also found too ambitious for its own good. The Velvet Underground is ambitious. It's a real rock and roll and documentary. It fills the screen with all kinds of things, and the soundtrack, of course, is sensational. And I think it's actually Todd Haynes' very best movie yet on a rock and roll subject. So if you want to see a really interesting documentary, if you have any interest in rock music, if you have any interest in The Velvet Underground, then by all means race out and see The Velvet Underground, which, by the way, is both in theaters and streaming. It's a really good movie. I found it a bit hyperactive. Maybe it crams it too much on a bit too much onto the screen and onto the soundtrack in its 2 hours of running time. Maybe just a little bit too much. It's always hopping. It's always jumping. It's always hitting you with a whole lot of stuff. But it's really wonderful to watch. And if you're interested in The Velvet Underground, Lou Reed, Andy Warhol, all that stuff, then it is probably going to be one of the best movies of the year for you. And that is my very hopping around from one place to another story this week, Jill.
It's the Active David Sterrett Report. Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Dune Part 1, Bergman Island, and The Velvet Underground.